Good afternoon, and welcome to the second hour of We the People Radio. My name is still Aaron Ryan.
And I'm still Bill Cundiff.
And are you going to do the little commercial?
Yeah, our sponsors. Sure. Our sponsors this hour, Team Power Tractors in Shasta Lake. They are our local John Deere and Kubota dealer. If you have any tractor needs, new, used, tractor repairs, or you just want to call up and talk about tractors, give them a call.
Yeah, don't do that. They don't have time for that.
No, they have time for
that. Ain't nobody got time for that.
226-9226. Talk to the friendly folks over there. They can get you fixed up. Right now, they're running a winter special for service. So if you
even though we haven't had winter?
Well, no, we've had winter. It was 3 weeks long. So the grass is growing, and if you need to get your stuff worked on, give them a call, and they'll get you fixed up over there in record time. Team Power, Shasta Lake at 3119 Twinview Boulevard. And that number again is 226-9226.
Area code 530 in case you live out of the area, which case you're probably not going to go there because it'd take too long to drive there.
Yeah, that's right.
That's why
I left it out.
And when they get their website fixed, we'll give you that. But right now, it's a secret. Our guest this hour is Peter Friedman. And you know what? It seemed like we hadn't had him on that long ago. And then I did a little homework. This is August 7th of 2016. What is wrong with us? That's just bizarre.
Time flies.
Holy cow, yeah. I thought it was like last year.
Seemed like yesterday.
Couldn't believe it. So just to give you a little background, in case you haven't been listening to us since 2016, I don't know what you've been doing on Sunday afternoons, but anyway, that's immaterial. Peter has been studying and lecturing on the threat of Islam to America for over 40 years. He maintains a thorough collection of Qurans and English translations, beginning with George Sales' translation of 1734 that I have not read, which is why we know Mr. Friedman, because he is the all-around expert. Lots of really good information about him, and one of the things that we had forgotten in reading his bio, many members of Peter Friedman's family were murdered in the Holocaust by the Nazis. It's also been a fascination that the Muslims supported the Germans both in World War I and World War II. And more detail there, he maintains a website called IslamThreat.com. And if you're driving or don't have anything to write with and can't remember all this good stuff, you can find all his information on our site along with links to previous shows at wethepeopleradio.us. Take it away, Mr. Friedman.
How are you this afternoon? I hadn't realized it had been that long.
I know, me either.
It didn't seem like we just did a show. Long at all.
I know, I read through the archives twice. I know, we missed you too. So it was funny when you sent me the article, Interfaith Discourse, Ritual Suicide. Bill started reading. He goes, have you read this yet?
That was fascinating read. Okay. I'll tell you what, I don't know how you could sit there and be bludgeoned with that. It was incredible.
So for the people who didn't read the webpage.
I asked questions at the end when they had a Q&A session.
Oh, how'd that work out?
Well, they finally asked me if I would leave.
Yeah.
Not the kind of questions they want to answer.
As I walked out, there was a very nice lady who was standing, an older lady standing at the door in the back as an usher. And she stopped me as I was walking out, and I was kind of grinning. And she stops me, and very quietly she says, you know, I agree with you.
Hmm. Yeah, silently outside.
And I said, well, I'll tell you what, go to my website. So I gave her one of my cards and hadn't heard from her since, but it was very interesting because there was a minister and a rabbi who were walking around the sanctuary with a microphone. And I was very surprised. It was the female rabbi who asked me to please leave. I was being disruptive.
Oh. Hmm. Nice. Well, so I know this sounds like a setup for a joke, but this was an actual event you went to. There was an imam, a rabbi, and a pastor.
Yeah, and they all went into a bar.
And they all went in. Exactly.
No, it's very funny because the question that actually got me thrown out was I asked the rabbi and the pastor if they had ever actually sat down and read the Quran, all, you know, 6,247 verses. And they both said, well, no, we haven't, but, you know, we rely on our friend here, the imam. And I said, well, I said, would you like to know how many places today he has been wrong? And that pretty much did it.
That's a big N-O.
Yeah. Now you're just being hateful. You're being nitpicky.
So these guys were supposed to be the, I think the title was hilarious. They were the Interfaith Amigos, and it was at a Presbyterian church, and they were supposed to be telling everybody how great all these things can get along. Was that the?
Oh yeah, you know, it's the old Rodney King thing. Can't we all just get along? Well, no, we can't.
No.
You know, when you have a dialogue with somebody, it's supposed to be on an equal footing. You have opinions, they have opinions, and you try and compromise and hash it out. Well, there is no dialogue with Islam. There just isn't, because of the ideology involved and what it says in the Quran about anybody who is a non-Muslim. It's that simple. And nobody bothers to read the book. That's why I put six copies up on the website. You know, starting with George Sales from 1734, that's the first English translation. And when you take a look at the rest of the Qurans up there, they all say the same thing. One says, kill the Jews and Christians. The other says, slaughter them. You're still dead.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we put a book up there on our site.
That was the referral from you.
Yeah,
It's All About Muhammad by Frank Burley.
Yeah, you want to read it?
My buddy Frank Burley.
Book, I'll tell you, it's a fairly lengthy read, but I will guarantee once you start it, you will not put it down. It's fascinating history of Muhammad, and it's, you know, you have it very well documented. But it really gives the life story of Muhammad and what he truly believed. And once you read that, I don't know how anybody could sit down and try to convince you that other faiths can live alongside the Muslim faith. It isn't what they believe.
Well, if you go to the Quran and you go to Book 3, verse 85, it specifically says, and I quote, any religion other than Islam is not acceptable to Allah.
No. Mm-hmm.
So,
deal breaker.
That's pretty clear.
Yeah, it's pretty clear. All the rest of that stuff in there is extremely clear. If you go on my website and you go to the Quran menu bar at the top, and it talks about the different Qurans there that are in PDF. They're all searchable. So you can put in the word kill and slaughter and all the rest of that, and it will do a Boolean search and then come up with every single verse that contains that word.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you come up with 109 violent war verses, you know, against the non-believer. You know, but nobody reads the book.
Right.
It just fascinates the heck out of me. I think I told you the last time we talked about when I did a lecture at the local city college here in Pleasant Hill in Diablo Valley College, and they were having a session on international relations, and the professor who I knew asked me if I would come up and talk to the class. So I went up there, and what I did was I handed out my Quran index. I printed it out, and it's three pages, three columns to a page. You can get it right on my website, download it for free, or you can download it from the internet. And I made it out actually in 2006, and because I got tired of hearing Sean Hannity debating some of these people and not being able to come back.
Mm-hmm.
And rebut what they were saying. So I printed the thing up and sent it to Hannity and Bill O'Reilly and Doc Savage and all the rest of these people. It was very interesting because today, or at least since 2006 now, you very seldom see an imam who is debating, you know, the host without the host coming right back and reading off of this.
Well, that's handy.
Janine Pirro, as a matter of fact, I sent her the Reliance of the Traveler, which is the Sharia law. And I was fascinated to see her actually with the big green hardback book on her desk about a year ago debating somebody and asking them, well, what about this and what about this and what about this? So I was up there at the college, and I handed out the Quran index to all of the violence and hatred in the Quran, where each verse had something to that effect. And a girl all of a sudden jumps up. She says, well, you know, I take exception to this document that you've given to us because it looks like you've cherry-picked all the violence out of the book. And I kind of looked at her and went, yeah, duh.
Yeah.
You know? And she says, well, she says, there's a lot of peaceful information in there, too. And I said, well, I could care less about that. That's not a problem. And she says, well, she says, I'm an Iranian Muslim, and I really am offended. And I said, well, really? I said, well, you're going to college here, you know, in America, and I'm looking around the room here, and I see all of these people here. Are these people your friends? Oh, yes, a lot of us are friends. And I said, well, do you hang out with your friends? Yes. Do you go to parties with your friends? Yes. Do you drink alcohol at those parties? Well, I drink wine. Okay. Have you, you know, been circumcised?
Oh.
And there was this dead silence. You could have heard a pin drop. And she says, well, no. She says, well, that's not for women. I said, really? I said, have you ever read the Quran? No. Well, how do you know what's in it? Well, my parents taught me. Well, maybe you should go read the Quran and read the Hadith and read the chapter in Bukhari that talks about female circumcision as well as male circumcision. I said, so let's take a stock of what you just said here. You call yourself a Muslim, yet you party, you listen to music, you dance, you drink, and you haven't been circumcised. Maybe you want to rethink how you characterize yourself because you're an apostate.
Oh, you are just making friends everywhere.
Oh, I'm telling you. You know, I read the book. I probably reread the Quran two or three times every year just to stay up on everything. Of course, it isn't going to change. But just so I remember, you know, verses and books in the Quran to answer questions. You know, and it's amazing. Nobody reads the book.
Right.
I remember that last time we spoke. That's the bottom line, is that by not being familiar with what's in the book, we can't debate. Frank's book, it's all about Muhammad. Actually, we have that on our webpage along with this program, but it's one of the books we recommend just because if you do wander into this discussion with somebody, it's a good tool. I mean, there are a lot of good, you guys have provided between the two of you. You have the best tools out there for how to have a conversation about this. We need to take a really quick break, and then we will be back. Just in case you're afraid we're going to run out of information, yeah, that'll never happen. In case you're worried we're going to run out of time. Uh-huh.
That's
our friend Peter Friedman. We have him as our hostage next week, too, so not to worry. We'll be right back. You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. All right, Peter. Let's, you know, we should also let people know that one thing you provided to us today was, for one, information about the the interfaith discourse that you went to, because I think they're doing that more and more, trying to kind of make this all normal. And you also gave people 10 questions they can ask if they go to one of those, so they too can be popular.
Yep. Couple of things, now that I got you here, this is great. I've been lecturing a lot on the refugee issue. But before I get into that, if you don't mind, I was accorded a great honor here last summer.
Oh, that's right. I forgot to put that on the page.
Oh, yes. I was named by the Southern Poverty Law Center as one of the 6 Bay Area hate groups. And it was hysterical because as soon as they came out with that, what they have on their website is IslamThreat.com, because they have no idea who I am. So I was contacted through the website by half a dozen different reporters, and they wanted to know how big the group was, you know, when we held our meetings. And I said, no, it's just a website. It's just me. Oh, well, why would the Southern Poverty Law Center say that you're the Bay Area hate group? I don't know. Maybe because I have put all these Qurans up on the internet. Mm. I said, you know, I said, that's where the hate comes from.
Yeah, no yeah. kidding.
You and Michael Savage, you're going to get banned from, England, huh?
No, I already was back in 2009.
Oh, too late.
I had arranged over in London to do several lectures over there, and I was specifically told that I would be arrested if I did.
Wow. Just for showing up?
For showing up and saying anything critical of Islam.
And doing any kind of educating.
That's so much.
Exactly.
That's what multiculturalism will get you when you're fully vested in that.
Yeah. Hey, I got something interesting to relate to you. As a matter of fact, along the same line, what happened in Vegas in October?
It stays in Vegas, though, right?
Yeah. Well, I wish it did. From some of the people that I have who are involved in the intelligence area.
Okay.
And I say that very advisedly. It's, you know, it's like military intelligence. It's an oxymoron. But it was interesting to come up with the following information about Vegas, and maybe this has something to do why we don't know anything about it still.
Oh, the Vegas shooting. Not Vegas,
yeah.
Just the town.
No, the shooting.
No. The
Vegas, come on, keep up.
Vegas. Capital Vegas. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. And what was interesting is, I think I told you before, I'm an NRA training counselor and a law enforcement firearm instructor. And I gave a class last Sunday all day, and in the class was this very lovely lady who showed me her wristband and related the fact that she was, in fact, in the audience down there and being shot at.
Oh.
And we had an interesting conversation because if you do the research, you'll discover that Al-Walid bin Talal, which a name should be familiar to everybody, owns 3 floors in the Mandalay Bay Hotel. One of the 3 floors is number 32, where Paddock did all the shooting from.
Mm-hmm.
Al-Walid bin Talal, if you know, was the son of Abdul Benaziz, who was the king of Saudi Arabia when Obama, he's the guy Obama bowed to.
Ooh.
Back in 2009. And Abdulaziz went and died, and the next king became his younger brother. Now, his younger brother had a son, or has a son, named Salman Benaziz. If you know Salman, Salman is the guy now who is the crown prince, is going around Saudi Arabia doing a lot of modernizing. He has now granted women the right to drive and all kinds of stuff. And he wants to more westernize Saudi Arabia. Well, Al-Walid bin Talal, if you remember, is the guy who offered Rudy Giuliani $10 million on 9/12. And Rudy told him to take his check and depart with it. Al-Walid bin Talal subsequently gave $20 million to Elena Kagan, who is a justice on our Supreme Court now, back in November of 2008, after the election, electing Obama, when Elena Kagan was the president of Harvard Law School. Now, all of this is up on my website, and it's the very first thing you come to on the left-hand sidebar, Islamic Finance 101 at Harvard, and you can read the whole thing up there. I have a copy of the actual seminar program for Islamic Finance 101 that was sponsored by the United States Treasury and Harvard Law School and Elena Kagan. So Kagan took the $20 million back in 08.
On behalf of Harvard?
On behalf of Harvard.
Okay.
Al-Waleed bin Talal also gave $20 million to John Esposito at Georgetown University to set up an Islamic studies program. And Al-Waleed bin Talal is the guy who also bought shares of stock in News Corp that Rupert Murdoch sold him. So Al-Waleed bin Talal owns a piece of Fox News. And Rupert Murdoch then got the opportunity to buy into Talal's network in the Middle East. So Talal thought he was going to be the next king of Saudi Arabia. That didn't happen, okay, because his dad died and his uncle took over. So Talal has very bad blood between him and his cousin Salman Aziz. Well, it happens that on the night of that shooting, Al-Waleed bin Talal happened to be in Vegas at the same time his cousin, Salman bin Aziz, was staying at the Tropicana. And apparently at the Tropicana, there was also a shootout of some kind. And the word is starting to go around that Al-Waleed bin Talal tried to set up an assassination of his cousin at the Tropicana, and somehow got involved with Paddock at Mandalay Bay as a diversion.
Wow.
Just little dots, you know, and I don't know whether anybody has really investigated that or, you know, the Bureau, of course, is too involved investigating, you know, Trump's collusion with Russia.
Yeah, right. Imaginary collusion is much, much more interesting.
Oh yeah!
Holy cow!
We'll
we need like a—you almost need a like a little playbook for some of that. I thought you were gonna here and here. I'm thinking you're gonna tell us you got banned from Las Vegas. Well, now you probably are. Actually, I guess maybe that's official.
Nothing official. But everything has gone dark.
Well, and that has become plainly obvious. Huh, well, let's let that sink in. We have to include some celebration of capitalism here, and then we'll be back with our guest, Peter Friedman. You can find him on our site at wethepeopleradio.us, and links to all of his information are on there. You'll like it. And we're back. All righty. Mr. Friedman, I should add one thing, that you have a nice note here about your website, islamthreat.com. It says, this website is created by Peter Friedman, containing his research and opinions. He is a scholar and a researcher, and an all-around good guy, who brings in-depth analysis and sterling references to subjects that most people are afraid to discuss. And that's absolutely the truth. Most people are afraid to wade into this because,
they get labeled a hater.
Well, let's face it, you get tangled in your own rope. I mean, we're not reading the Quran three times a year and dissecting it. So, you know, you just don't feel confident weighing in. They say one thing and you're like, oh, dead in the water.
I'll tell you something funny. You brought up my friend Frank's book. It's all about Muhammad. up until about 150 years ago, Muslims were not referred to as Muslims. They were referred to as Mohammedans. And throughout history for something like 1,200 years. And the problem was that long about 150 years ago, people started inquiring about the life of Muhammad, because in the Quran and in the Hadith, it states that, you know, Muhammad led the perfect life, and that all followers of Muhammad should try to emulate him. And then a lot of this stuff started to come out about Muhammad, and that's when they decided that they better change the name, you know, for PR purposes, and that's when you wound up with Muslims who are followers, translated, of Islam.
Oh, I did not know that.
If you go back and you start looking up Mohammedans, they were the followers of Muhammad. And Muslim is a recent thing. It's kind of like Palestinians, you know. Palestine wasn't referred necessarily, or the people living there, as Palestinians until Nixon.
Hmm. No kidding. What were they?
Little piece of history.
What were they before that?
They were just Arabs.
Oh. So what about all this whole thing about their culture and blah, blah, blah?
Well, there was no culture. I mean, that's all. Awkward. All of that is nonsense. It's a myth. The closest thing that you can come to Palestinian historically would be the Philistines in biblical, you know, biblical lore and the Bible and Goliath and, you know, and anybody who was referred to as a Philistine, you know, was somebody who had no integrity, no honor, and was a lecherous person. And
yeah.
they were a Philistine.
Well, a Philistine wasn't a place. It was a slur, right?
Exactly.
Oh, okay.
You know, but... you know, it just goes on and on, and, you know, there was the mandate for Palestine in 1922 as a result of the Versailles Peace Conference. And the mandate for what then was referred to as Palestine was given to the British, and that's a whole other, you know, thing that we can do if you ever want to. But
in the days of Muhammad, I'm sure there were quite a few... Muslim. What's the word I'm looking for?
I don't know.
Moderates. I mean, there were moderate Muslims back then. How did that all start coming about? Because if you're a moderate Muslim, you're not really a Muslim, are you?
That's absolutely correct. You're an apostate. You have to understand that as an ideology, is not moderate.
Right.
So you either follow it and are devout to it, and you believe all the religious obligations to, for example, in the Quran, Book 2, 191, slay the believers wherever you find them. Book 9, verse 123, make war on the infidels living in your neighborhood. I mean, it just goes on and on and on. So... you know, as a matter of fact, I can give you a personal reference. I work with appears to be a very nice guy, who's 30 years old, and he is a Muslim, or was raised that way, from Pakistan. And his father is a university professor. His mother also, you know, is very well educated, you know, and it was very funny because when I got involved with this company where he is, after a couple of weeks, I said, you know, I feel obligated to tell you my background as far as Islam is concerned. He says, I know all about it. He says, I looked you up on the internet.
Oops.
And I said, and
I've been putting arsenic in your sandwiches for 3 weeks.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, no, sorry.
You know, and I said, and what's your opinion? He says, I agree with you. He says, and I am not that kind, you know, and I was not raised that way, and I know what's in the book, but I feel that just is not where I want to be, which is why I'm in America, which is why I became an American citizen. And I said, well, you got to be very careful in mixed company when you characterize yourself as a Muslim, you know? And I said, you know, imagine, for example, with what I know, okay, and the background of my family, if I am introduced to somebody and he's wearing a swastika armband, I know exactly who he is. In the same vein, if I'm introduced to someone who characterizes themselves as a Muslim, then from my background and my research and everything, I kind of understand who they are, which then begs the question, how much of that do you really subscribe to and that you feel religiously committed to enact? So it all depends. Now, this guy that I know, I've been with him for over a year now, and I would have no problem with him moving in next door because he's a bad Muslim. You know?
In a good way.
And he has two beautiful kids. His wife does not wear a hijab, whatever, but that's the cultural background that he comes from. But he's, I can't characterize him as a moderate Muslim. I would characterize him as a Muslim who does not believe in the violence and hatred in the Quran and the religious obligations against non-believers.
So how can you call yourself a Muslim? I mean, that's like saying I'm a Christian, but the whole Jesus thing, I mean, he was probably a nice guy and everything, but I'm not really drinking the Kool-Aid on that. It's the same thing.
I dragged you into my trap.
Well, that's where I see it.
Bill's got a hook hanging right out of his lip.
So I get into this intellectual conversation with him, and I said, okay, I said, answer me this. I said, if you take the Old Testament, and you can only keep one thing out of the Old Testament that will help everybody to live peacefully with each other, what would it be? Well, the Ten Commandments. Okay? Take the New Testament. If you can only keep one thing out of the New Testament that will help everybody to live peacefully with each other, what would it be? Well, how about going to Matthew, you know, and the Sermon on the Mount, and the Beatitudes, love and compassion? There you go. And I said, now, I said, let's get to you. If you could only keep one thing out of the Quran that would help you to live peacefully with your neighbors, what would it be? Dead silence.
Oops.
Dead silence. And he said, well, he says, maybe we should hold that off for a discussion another day. I said, okay. So every now and then I ask him if he's thought about it. So we'll convert him.
Yeah, because at the end of the day, there's no, as they say, no there.
There is no there. What are you going to do? So, you know, he started to bring up the five, you know, pillars of faith, and I'm going, okay, and what's number four? Well, he says, that's charity. Really? What is the Arabic word in the five pillars? And he goes, well, it's zakat. Okay, well, now tell me what the difference is between zakat and sadaqah in Arabic. Well, I really don't know. Okay, well,
we don't either. What's the difference?
I'll tell you what the difference is. Zakat is the fourth pillar of the faith of Islam. It is not charity. It is a tax. It is a tax that can be used only for eight purposes. It's found in Sharia, and purpose number seven of zakat is for arming the holy warriors.
In other words, that tax is to be used for that purpose.
That is for holy war, for jihad.
Mm-hmm.
Sadaqah, on the other hand, is charity, and you can give sadaqah to a non-Muslim. A Muslim can actually give sadaqah to a non-Muslim. But he cannot give zakat, to anybody but a Muslim.
Hmm.
And so all of a sudden, he goes, where would I find that? I said, well, come into my office. So I handed him a copy of Reliance of the Traveler, and I showed him exactly where it is. And he says, gee, I didn't know that. I said, well, maybe you should think about, you know, some of this stuff and how you're raising the kids and you're in America and understand, you know, that not all cultures are equal.
Or compatible.
So, or compatible. Yeah, it was a very interesting conversation.
Wow.
Anyway.
That's pretty cool.
I just want to touch on the refugee thing for a minute.
All right, hang on 2 seconds, and we will do our final celebration of capitalism for the hour. And then we'll roll it right up to the top. And whatever we have left over, like everything, we'll hit next week, because there's a lot of good stuff in here, and you have a ton of information, and we have missed you. So our guest is Peter Friedman. You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. Bill doesn't do modern music. Okay, I don't either. We don't know anything about modern music. We stopped listening somewhere in the 70s, I think. Okay, so you were going to talk about the refugee situation. Can you believe that? I remembered that all the way through that two-minute break. Bonus points for me.
Excellent. I'd like to actually do the whole program next week on what I've been doing with the refugee situation and lecturing.
Oh, good.
And going through, you know, the various laws and stuff. But one of the things that I found really interesting lately is that out of the Syrian refugees that we brought here, Starbucks has employed 10,000 of them, and the head of Starbucks, Howard Schultz, has asked for another 10,000.
Wow.
So I go to Pete's. I shop at Pete's now.
I drink gas station coffee. I'm just out of the whole thing. Or Dutch Brothers, because they're really nice up here and they're good guys. Interesting. So, okay, for your, if you want to, I realize we have like 10 minutes. Can you buzz through some of the questions for those people that may not go online? I mean, let's encourage them to go on there and read these, because actually it's super informative. But if you do wind up going to some interfaith thing where everybody's trying to tell you, oh, it's just like Christianity, only just slightly different.
Yeah, it's a whole lot different. Let me give you a couple of teasers so that maybe people can ask questions next week. What was really interesting getting into this is that we didn't have any immigration between 1924 and 1964. Zip, nada. And the reason was that in 1924, you might find this very interesting. Go, you know, check it up. In 1924, we had in America what was called the Red Scare, the R-E-D, Red Scare. What happened was that there were a lot of Bolsheviks who Stalin threw out of Russia after the revolution in 1917, came over here, and in 1924, they banded together and tried to overthrow the government of the United States and set up a communist government. They were put down rather severely. And again, look it up on Google. It's called the Red Scare. And that is when the ACLU was created. And the ACLU was created specifically in 1924 to defend the communists that tried to overthrow the American government. So what happened was between 1924 and 1964, there was no immigration. And that was basically because of what had happened under the Red Scare. We didn't want to bring anybody in here that we really didn't, you know who they were.
Well, you can't do that today.
No. So what happened in 1964?
Diversity law.
1964, as you recall, we had Lyndon Johnson. And Lyndon Johnson got into cahoots with Ted Kennedy and, believe it or not, Joe Biden. And they
Uncle Joe?
Uncle Joe. And I hope he runs in 2020 if he's still alive, because I will broadcast this to the rooftops. Joe Biden and Ted Kennedy went to Johnson and said that we got a neat idea for what to do with all the Vietnamese refugees now that we're in Vietnam. We're going to bring them over here in droves. We're going to make them citizens, and they're all going to vote Democrat because we're going to put them on welfare.
No
1964.
Fooling.
Great society, you know, the war on poverty, all of this crazy nonsense. And I'm dying to go see this new movie with Woody Harrelson playing LBJ to find out whether any of that garbage is in there.
I'm just guessing.
No.
No.
Nobody has ever asked Joe Biden, you know, tell us about 1964 and this whole refugee thing with the Vietnamese and everything. Well, then we fast forward to 1993 with Bill Clinton. And in 93, and with Bill Clinton, if you recall, that's when Clinton brought 20,000 Somalis over here after Mogadishu. And that's why we have all the Somali problems in Minnesota. And a lot of them were given to Tyson Chicken down in Arkansas. Gee whiz, Arkansas, Bill Clinton.
And you have a huge Somali population in Maine, of all places.
Oh, yes, they do now. They do now. So, you know, if you start to follow all of this stuff, in the 96 election, his re-election, just before the election, he and Al Gore got together, and they came up with a scheme to naturalize 330,000 of these people so that they would vote Democrat in that election. All this stuff is out there.
Wow.
You know, all you got to do is look it up. If you have an interest, it's all out there. But this is the kind of stuff that I would love to go into next week. There are 9 exclusive charitable institutions that are contracted to the State Department to bring the refugees in here and to essentially resettle them. In California, there have been 7,000 refugees a year coming from Muslim countries that have settled here. There are 4 targeted cities. This is all documented in material that I'll send you this week so that you can read it for yourself in the congressional report every year that has to go to the judiciary committees of the House and the Senate. How many refugees the president intends to bring in, where they're coming from, the countries, the median ages, all of this kind of stuff. And what was interesting is in the last 2016-2017, reports, there are 4 targeted cities for Muslim resettlement in California. There's San Diego, Modesto, Sacramento, and Walnut Creek.
Wow.
And
now, is that still on the slate to happen, or was that from the previous administration?
Nope. They're still trying to bring that in. That's the State Department issue. And
okay.
I think that's why DeSantis, Congressman DeSantis from Florida, has decided that he's going to start looking into the State Department and what they were up to during the Obama administration, and to bring all of this stuff to the attention of the current administration. So, you know, hopefully Trump is going to stand his ground on this DACA thing and kill this diversity visa program and kill the chain migration issue, you know, which all the Democrats today are saying is, you know, a dog whistle for racism, yet they were all saying it 2 years ago.
Yeah, that's unfortunate, isn't it? And awkward.
Unbelievable. Just unbelievable. But, you know, people, you've got to stay vigilant, you've got to stay alert, and you've got to stay informed. It scares the hell out of me every time I see, you know, Jesse Waters on Fox News or Jeanine Pirro walking around Manhattan and asking people, you know, who the vice president is, and they have no idea.
Yeah.
Isn't that still Joe Biden? No, we had a change in regime here. So,
Actually, that's pretty good if they even knew that. That's actually not bad.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I, cannot imagine what would have happened if Hillary had been elected.
Hmm. Oh, yeah. We'd be living in a whole new world.
Yeah, nothing good.
Done. You know, absolutely done.
Well, and then on the flip side, you have the people who are happy with the way things turned out, but their civics education isn't much stronger. I have people who ask me all the time why, you know, our local congressman can't just go to the president to tell him to go to one of the secretaries to tell one of the agencies to, you know, go do something that actually is against the law.
Separation of power.
And it's like, hey, that's Venezuela. You know?
Well, we've got to do something about some of these federal judges. You know, it seems to me, at least we're in the Ninth Circuit, and it seems to me, since that's the most overturned circuit in the country, that if a federal court judge is overturned, let's say, three times, you remember the three strikes and you're outlaw?
I was going to say.
Oh, God, I've said that for a long time.
We're going to do the
judges.
Baseball.
You know, if you are overturned in your judgment three times, then you're relieved of duty. You know, you're out of here. So we'll
not
see
a
what
bad
happens.
Idea.
We'll see what happens. Three strikes and you're out.
No kidding. Out of your points here that you suggest people bring up, what do you think are the top two?
At this particular point in time, I would think that I'd love to talk about the FBI, but that's a whole different issue. I worked for them undercover back in the 90s.
You did?
I got some really funny stories.
Hey, we didn't know that.
We'll put that on the list for next week. Put that on the list, yeah.
Yeah, well, you know what FBI stands for, right?
I'm sure your acronym's more fun than ours.
Famous but incompetent.
That's actually pretty good.
Remind me to tell you about a sting operation we did with DOD. Back in 1992, it was hysterical. Nothing ever changes. Nothing changes. You know, it's like FAA, feds against aviation, or find another answer.
You know, it's so funny you say that because my father, who passed away in 2000, was in law enforcement his whole life, and to this day, cannot remember one good thing he ever said about the FBI. He always referred to them as just bundlers. You know, they just couldn't get stuff right. They just and I always thought, well, it's just your dad
being a hater.
Yeah, you know, there's got to be something more to it because the FBI. I mean, this is a premier law enforcement agency on the planet. But I got to tell you,
propaganda.
Yeah,
propaganda.
Lately I think we're starting to see what was really going on there. So, hey, we are totally out of time, but Peter, we're going to make a list.
Well, we're not really out of time. We're just taking a brief pause that takes 7 days.
Yeah, because we got a lot to talk about.
We're going to come back. Hey, and what you send us, obviously, for next week, I will have posted. I have the page built for next week, so folks can go on the website. And take a look at that, read stuff about today, go onto your page and look up everything. So you can find all the information about our show, archives, guests at wethepeopleradio.us. Thanks, Peter. See you next week.